It is 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 42 degrees under fair skies. At the airport, they have east winds at 7 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. Look for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 45, calm winds turning to the east to 5. Rain is likely late tonight, mainly after 1 a.m., increasing clouds as the night goes on with a low of 38, east winds 5 or 10.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Protests at Tennessee's state capitol, where Republican state lawmakers have approved a new U.S. House map that divides a majority black district representing Memphis. It's part of a broad effort President Trump has pushed in the South to give Republicans an edge in retaining their congressional majority in this year's midterm elections. Today's development comes in the wake of the recent Supreme Court ruling that further weakened the Voting Rights Act as it struck down a congressional map in Louisiana that created a second majority black district. Iran is denying that its armed forces were responsible for an explosion aboard a South Korean tanker stranded in the Strait of Hormuz. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports from Seoul that South Korea is still investigating the cause of the blast.
An explosion hit the Panamanian-flagged cargo ship operated by a South Korean shipping company on Monday. A fire then broke out in the engine room, but there were no injuries. President Trump said that Iran had fired on the ship and said that's why South Korea should join Project Freedom, intended to escort merchant ships through the Strait of Hormuz. But Iran's embassy in Seoul said in a statement that it had nothing to do with the explosion. Seoul said it did not need to consider joining Project Freedom, as Trump himself announced its suspension after about 2 days. The ship is being towed to a dock in Dubai, and a South Korean government team has been sent to investigate. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Seoul.
Due to the war, world oil prices are high, but they have eased back. Patrick DeHaan at Gas Buddy says it'll take a while to see relief in soaring U.S. gas prices.
The national average is starting to decline. It's down about a penny a gallon today. Nothing significant, but it does generally take a little bit longer for declines in prices to start rippling down to stations.
AAA reports that people are paying now, on average, $4.56 for a gallon of regular gasoline. A new poll shows Americans believe many members of Congress are too old. NPR's Elena Moore reports on the latest findings from NPR, PBS News, and Marist.
The poll looked at support for maximum age limits and term limits for members of Congress, and it found that the vast majority of Americans, 8 in 10, support both. It's also got bipartisan backing. 78% of Democrats and 83% of Republicans like the idea of age caps, and similar amounts support term limits. 18-year-old Michael Hatch of Eudora, Kansas, feels that way about leaders in Washington.
They just might be out of touch. You got 70, 80-year-olds in Congress running the country. It's not representing people like me.
But support for age and term limits goes past young folks. The generation with the most support, Gen X, folks in their late 40s to early 60s. Elena Moore, NPR News.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. At least 16 candidates are vying to be the next governor of Alaska in this year's primary election. One of those candidates is Republican and former Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson. KMXT's Catherine Irving spoke with Bronson during his visit to Kodiak last week for a bear hunting trip with his son. And she has this report.
My name is Dave Bronson. I'm a 35-year resident of the state of Alaska. Most of that time was in Anchorage, a little bit in Eagle River. And I'm a former military officer, pilot, and commercial operator. So I flew. I was in the Air Force and the Air National Guard for 24 years, and then I was in the airlines, flew for Northwest and Delta Airlines for 30 years. I'm running for governor. I think I'm the most qualified person for this job. I've held the job that's in the state for 3 years, the mayor's job, the closest job in the state, and I've done it. It's a political executive position. No one else in the field has done that.
Yeah, and here in Kodiak, it's specifically, we have this huge commercial like fishing population, right, and the industry as a whole is not doing so well right now. So yeah, how would you propose addressing some of those issues that we're currently having in the commercial fishing industry, like, you know, poor vessel prices, you know, Russian seafood, all that?
I've taken a pretty strong stand on the issue of large factory trawling. And dragging the bottom of the ocean. And I know in some select fisheries, you have to do that. But writ large, we've got to stop doing that. And I'm getting a little bit tired of folks, corporations, individuals from Lord of 48 coming up here, taking our resources and not leaving us any money. And I believe the large factory trawlers are part of that. And not to mention the fact that the fisheries are in decline. You know, pollock fisheries, the take is going down. And I think we're, my belief is that we're probably taking too much pollock. We've got to statutorily keep them, I don't know if it's 5 fathoms, 10 fathoms, 20 fathoms off the bottom, so your net never touches the bottom. And they say, oh, you know, they don't like that. And again, this isn't the small boats that are like down in this harbor that are the problem. It's the large factory trawlers who take so much and then they process their fish on their trawler, on their factory ships, and they leave us very little money, very little. And I think they're depleting and harming the commercial fisheries.
Our next question is about the permanent fund dividend.
Right.
So do you support the full statutory PFD? Why or why not?
Well, the magic word you said it was statutory. It's the law. This is what I believe is the one good thing government has done. It was the permanent fund dividend. Great idea. It returns the wealth, I think, back to the people. But the program has been abused or has been mismanaged for nearly 40 years, and it lost its way, and we don't have the money. And I'm not saying we can't cut government. We certainly can, and I will. But the notion that you're going to get to $4,000 PFD short of 6 to 10 years, our estimate, Josh Church, my running mate, is a finance guy, and he's got a team that's looking at that. Because the other side of this is, and let me take another slice at this. We have 15 departments. You could get rid of 13 of the smallest departments, and you're only at $1.1 billion. I mean, and I say sell the building, sell the vehicles, get rid of all the expenses, and get rid of the people. $1.1 billion. This isn't possible. And I'm not going to stand here in a campaign just because I want this job and tell you something that's just not true.
The cost of living in rural Alaska is pretty high. Keeps going up.
Oh, my goodness.
How would you focus on keeping cost of living down?
Our logistics is what causes our costs. That's why we need more roads and the bridges that go with those roads. We got to develop the energy. We've got to grow the revenue side. And we've got to drive down the expense side. And you do that, I think, philosophically, in part, by getting government out of the way. And what I had an ethos in municipal government was, your job is to get to yes. When a private investor comes in and has a demonstrably good idea, your job is not to say, no, you can't have the permit, we're not going to do the planning, we're not going to cooperate. No, your job is to get to yes, because that person is a customer of government, and we have forgotten that.
Final question. What's your 1 minute elevator pitch? Why should our listeners vote for you?
You got to ask yourself three questions when you're looking at a candidate. Everyone has to do that. Right, left, doesn't matter. You got to say, does that person agree with me ideologically? And I think in this field, on the Republican side, except for maybe one or two exceptions, we're ideologically the same. We are. The next question is, can they do the job if they get the job? And the third question you have to ask is, can the person get elected? Because if you're great on the first two, if you can't get elected, it's all meaningless. So all three questions have to be answered in the affirmative. And the polling is quite clear. On the right side, contrary to what a few folks are saying, one, I'm certainly in the top four. And two, on the right side, I'm polling number one on the right side, on the Republican side.
Again, that was gubernatorial candidate Dave Bronson speaking with KMXT's Catherine Irving earlier this month. You can hear the full conversation online at kmxt.org. A bill that aims to bring stability to the school budgeting process made its way out of the House Finance Committee on Tuesday. The bill is essentially the same as when the committee first considered it last month, but that could still change in the final weeks of the legislative session. KTOO's Jamie Deep has this report.
Calculating school funding is complicated. It's currently based on enrollment projections, which can create uncertainty in a school district's budgeting process. House Bill 261 would allow districts to use known numbers instead of projections to build budgets. In the bill, districts could use enrollment numbers from the previous year or a three-year average of prior years. But if the district's count in the current year is at least 5% greater than the other options, that can be used instead. On top of that, districts could have options for how to count students who receive intensive services, such as students who need multiple services to help with communication and motor skills. The bill would ensure all students are accounted for when determining funding. Ketchikan Republican Representative Jeremy Bynum attempted to simplify the options by only requiring a three-year average be used across the board. He says taking an average gives districts predictability while placing the responsibility on them to plan for changing enrollments.
So in years that they have lower counts, they're getting more money. And in years they have higher counts, they might be getting just a little bit less. But ultimately, they still have a fund balance that they're able to absorb those.
Representative Elise Galvin, an Anchorage independent, opposed the amendment. She said school districts are legally required to provide intensive services for students who need them, and taking an average won't work for them. Those students get 13 times the funding of other students in the state's funding formula.
So if we're smoothing out, and in some years we have over and some a little under, I guess that's where I do draw the line, because we have legal responsibilities that absolutely cannot be underfunded when it comes to our intensive needs students.
Representative Andy Story, a Juneau Democrat and the bill's sponsor, says districts with growing enrollments should be able to have the opportunity to receive the funding to serve incoming students.
If their district was showing an upturn, they didn't want to have to wait to have that accounted. They wanted to be able to make sure that our formula adjusted for what they saw as a bright spot, and wanted to make those students and families have those resources.
Lawmakers narrowly rejected the amendment in a 6-5 vote. According to the most recent fiscal notes, the bill is expected to cost more than $113 million. Most districts are estimated to receive more funding. Bynum says he wants to see more specific modeling on how the school districts will be affected.
I don't believe that we've done the necessary work that we need to do for this complex bill, but I will be... I won't be getting in the way for us to continue moving the ball forward on it.
After the committee meeting, Story, the bill's sponsor, said she's working to get more specific data and that it will be presented as the bill moves through the legislative process. The bill was referred to the House Rules Committee on Wednesday. The committee has not met yet this year. The regular session is scheduled to end on May 20th. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
Lawmakers in the Alaska House unveiled their first draft of the state's capital budget on Monday. It adds about $100 million in spending to the roughly $250 million capital budget that passed the Senate last month. Most of the added items focus on shoring up schools and university facilities around the state. Representative Calvin Schroggy, an Anchorage independent who co-chairs the House Finance Committee, says the House's approach to an unexpected influx of war-related oil revenue mirrors the Senate's.
To the extent we have surplus revenues this year, we want to make sure that we're directing those towards really addressing our huge backlog in deferred maintenance across the state.
More than half of the House's additions would go toward K-12 schools across the state, including repairs to Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka and the construction of a new school in the Northwest Arctic community of Deering. The House's capital budget also includes $9 million in funding for 9 renewable energy projects around the state. from Southeast Alaska to the Rail Belt to the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. And it would set aside $15 to $25 million in funding for upgrades to the Port of Alaska in Anchorage, depending on oil prices. The new draft also removes the state's authorization to receive roughly $135 million in federal funding for two controversial transportation projects, the Cascade Point Ferry Terminal in Juneau and the West Susitna Access Road in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Both projects have been the subject of intense criticism, but removing the West Susitna project from the state's capital budget drew pushback from Republican lawmakers, including Fairbanks Republican Will Stapp.
The West Sioux Access Project is one of the few things that we have in Alaska that is going toward positive steps for resource development. We're a resource development state.
The House Finance Committee is scheduled to consider amendments today and tomorrow. Schragi says he expects the bill to head to the House floor next week. Whaling is an essential part of subsistence hunting in Siberian Yupik culture. High school student Tracy Tungdian in the village of Gamble on St. Lawrence Island wanted to understand more about it, so he interviewed a whaling captain from the community, William Parks, named Wiyu. He spoke to Parks in the library of the Gamble School and asked him whether whaling is easy or difficult.
There's a degree of difficulty in it. You got to think of how enormous the whale is. You're in basically a washtub compared to the size of that whale. Depending on how the whale is moving, it could be pretty straightforward. Catch up to it, strike, and then there's some days where the tails are really thrashing. You can't get close to them. We use these harpoons that have a barrel on there. We call them buscon. I don't know what they're called in English. I've always known them as buscon. It has a harpoon, buoy line, buoy, and it fires either a black powder bomb or a penthrite bomb into the whale.
What does like hunting mean to you?
That's a good question. To me, hunting is mostly about survival. It's about tradition. And it's about feeding family, relatives, the community, which is the most important part of life, in my opinion. You need food to survive. I think mostly it's like second nature to me. I don't even think of how important this is to me anymore, more so that it's the way I was brought up to live. It's a part of me. It's been a part of me since I was 2-3 years old.
Was it easier hunting back then or?
Back then it was, seasons were more predictable, weather was more predictable. In a way it was easier. Nowadays, with lack of ice, bigger storms, shorter opportunities to head out, yeah, I think it's more difficult now compared to back then. The windows of good weather are getting shorter. I know that everybody that goes out hunting isn't doing it for fun or sport. They're doing it in means of trying to harvest food as a part of who we are as people, as the community. Hunting is part of our nature. It's been for thousands of years.
Why is catching a whale so important for Gamble?
I think it's important mostly because the size of the catch. There's enough to feed everybody. Just the sheer size of the whale, it's an opportunity to feed the community, to have a community gather. Whaling has been part of our culture since the first whale swam and man saw it. It was a means of survival.
That was William Wiyu Parks speaking with high school student Tracy Tungian about his work as a whaling captain. The temporary flood wall along the Mendenhall River just barely protected hundreds of homes from Juneau's largest glacial outburst flood last year. This summer, city and federal contractors planned to build it much higher, but after the project cost ballooned, leaders decided to scale back that plan. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports.
Until Monday, both the Army Corps of Engineers and the City and Borough of Juneau said they were building the Mendenhall River flood wall to withstand a flood nearly double the size of last year, at 90,000 cubic feet per second. But now, they say they'll build the wall to withstand a flood about 30% larger than last year. That's after the Juneau Assembly voted 7-2 to change the plan. City Manager Katie Kester said the wall will be lower because construction is far more expensive than anticipated.
To do the project as we originally envisioned, the project that I emailed every riverfront property owner and said we were building to 90,000 is just not feasible with available funding.
Building the city's portion of the wall, phase one, to that level is now expected to cost nearly four times the initial estimate. Kester says the city couldn't have known that until crews started working on the HESCO barriers, which are steel cages lined with fabric and filled with sand. This spring, the ground remained frozen for much longer than last year, so work on the barriers was delayed about a month.
As staff got into this project and started really digging, they realized they had to undo large chunks of the HESCO barriers. So instead of just going in and fortifying them or adding a couple barriers, it actually meant rebuilding entire sections of wall. It meant twice as many barriers as in phase one.
Denise Koch is the city's engineering and public works director. At the meeting, she presented new figures. It would cost another $8 million to build it against a flood twice the size of last year versus $3 million to make it withstand a flood 30% bigger.
This is a really, really difficult situation for the community, especially people who live in the inundation area. And we're similar to last year. We're always having to make decisions quickly with incomplete information.
The assembly decided to spend the additional $3 million this year, under the assumption that the flood wall will have to be built higher again next year and that it will be more expensive to do that then. The funding gap comes at a lean time for the city. The assembly has proposed cutting dozens of services and closing facilities after voters passed ballot measures that created a large annual budget hole. The city expects it will need to continue paying for temporary flood protection for another decade or more, while the Army Corps figures out a long-term solution. Suicide Basin is the source of Juneau's annual glacial outburst flood. It's a large lake tucked between Jagged Mountains and the Mendenhall Glacier, which acts as an ice dam. Each summer, when the dam breaks, it unleashes billions of gallons of water beneath the glacier that rushes through the suburban Mendenhall Valley. As the glacier melts due to climate change, the basin grows, and so does the flood, for now. Mike Records is a hydraulic engineer at the Army Corps in Alaska. He estimates the basin will release damaging glacial outburst floods for roughly another 25 years before it stops being a problem. But he says that prediction could change.
As the glacier continues to retreat, there might be a second Mendenhall Lake, which would then cause significant calving and would accelerate the rate of retreat of the Mendenhall Glacier.
Because glaciers retreat faster on water than on land, he says that could dramatically reduce how long the annual flood remains a problem. Scientists are currently working to refine the flood lifespan estimate by measuring the depth of the glacier and how quickly it's thinning and retreating. Records says the Army Corps considers engineering solutions according to the probability that a flood will exceed a given size within a certain number of years. And he says the risk accumulates over time. It's like flipping a coin repeatedly.
You flip a coin, there's a 50% chance of getting heads. But you know if you keep flipping that coin, you will get a tail eventually.
The Army Corps' analysis shows a very low chance of a flood twice the size of last year happening this year. But a flood that large has a 40% chance of hitting the valley at least once in the next 25 years. And HESCO barriers are not made to last that long. John Rajek is the chief of geotechnical and engineering services at the Army Corps in Alaska. He says the agency aims to start on a medium-term solution next year and is weighing a few ideas. The first idea is to simply build the HESCO barriers higher. The second idea is to rework the river channel to move floodwater out of the valley faster.
The third concept that we're looking at is a sheet pile wall system that would basically act as a flood wall.
Sheet pile walls are commonly used to create seawalls. They're thin, lightweight, and driven down into the soil. They'd replace the HESCO barriers. The next flood is expected this summer. It has struck in August the past 3 years. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
From May 9th through May 18th, no-cost medical, dental, behavioral health, and optometry services will be available in Kodiak and surrounding villages as part of the Arctic Care Mission hosted by Kodiak Area Native Association. In Kodiak, schedule appointments online at kodiakhealthcare.org. Village residents can schedule services through their local clinic. Check out kodiakhealthcare.org and the CANA Facebook page for more information.
The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center provides confidential advocacy and support for victims and survivors of domestic violence. In partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association, KWRCC also offers programs like Gather and Grow, a free 5-week group that uses art and creative expression to explore boundaries, relationship goals, and healing. All are welcome. Gather and Grow meets Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. in May. Dinner and art materials are provided. More information is available at 907-486-6171 or by email at outreach@kwrcc.org.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 7th day of May, the year 2026. The sun rose today at 6:03. It will set again at 10:10. That will give us 16 hours and 7 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 27 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 61 degrees set in 1918, and our record low was 23, set in 1972. It is currently 42 degrees in Kodiak. It's been stubbornly 42 degrees. Let me go to the other window. 42 degrees in Kodiak with fair skies, light easterly winds, 10 miles of visibility at the airport, and the prediction for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day. High near 45, calm winds turning to the east around 5 or so later this afternoon. Tonight, look for increasing clouds and the likelihood of rain after 1 a.m., a low of 38, east winds 5 or 10, turning to the northeast after midnight. And for tomorrow, look for rain before 7 a.m., then showers are likely after 7 a.m., with cloudy skies, high near 45, northeast winds to 10 or so. For Saturday, a chance of rain. Sunday, a chance of showers. And Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, showers are likely. We are at low tide right now on the east side. That just happened. That was a 5/10 of a foot tide. Is a 5/10 of a foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 7:12 p.m. and be 5.5 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen in about 15 minutes at 12:44 p.m., a 9/10 of 1 foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 9:21 p.m. of 9.9 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Variable 10 today with seas at 3 feet, northeast 20 tonight with 4-foot seas, and northeast 20 tomorrow with seas at 5 feet, building all the way up to 8 feet Friday night. For the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 today with 2-foot seas, northeast 20 tonight with 5-foot seas, and for tomorrow, northeast 20 with seas at 5 feet in the Shelikof. Just outside of the city of Kodiak in Chiniak Bay, variable less than 10 today, becoming southeast 10 in the afternoon with 3-foot seas today in Chiniak Bay. For tonight, east 10 and 3-foot seas, and for tomorrow, northeast 15 with 4-foot seas, coming down to 3 feet Friday night. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be meeting tonight in the Borough Assembly Chambers for a regular meeting. That will happen at 6:30 p.m. On Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And next Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a budget work session tonight in the City Hall Conference Room. The meeting will begin at 5:30 p.m. It is open to the public and will be web-streamed as well. The web-streaming link and meeting packet are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you need more information, contact the City Clerk at 907-486-8636. Also tonight, the latest edition of the Infant Nutrition Workshops put on by Kodiak Kindness. That will be tonight, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. Join other parents for this informative, interactive workshop that teaches a developmental approach to introducing solids based on current infant feeding recommendations. All family members and caregivers are invited. Let them know ahead of time if you need support in Tagalog or Spanish. Visit kodiakkindness.org or call 907-539-2660 to register for more information. But again, that is tonight, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library Infant Nutrition Workshop. On Sunday, May 10th, they are having another edition of their rehearsals, open music workshop, in which our own Ellamy Tiller and Eric Quint sit down with their instruments and invite anyone to come, workshop with a song, sing with a live band, jam out, or just play music for the first time. Anything goes, all ages, all skill levels, and they always have it on a Sunday, and they're having one this next Sunday, May 10th. 6 p.m. is when it starts, or no, when you have showtime for those who've been working all day, but it goes all day, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Show up and jam out with some instruments provided. Bring your own instrument, or if you have a song that you'd like to work on, and it's a really fun thing to listen to, too. And that's this next Sunday, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. At 6 p.m. will be showtime for anyone who's been wanting to perform whatever they workshopped during the day. So it's a lot of fun. It's happening at the Kodiak Island Brewing and Still this next Sunday, beginning at 1 p.m. And don't forget, on Friday is this year's commencement, celebrating an incredible group of graduates. That tomorrow's commencement ceremony will be at 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. And they'll also be recognizing Dr. Kitty Deal, who has been awarded emerita status. And they're honored to have UA Provost Denise Ranji and UAA CTC Dean Ray Weber joining them on stage. This will be Jocelyn Key's final commencement. May 9th marks her last day as director of Kodiak College. Again, that's 7 p.m., Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium on Friday.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.